Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Tom Rayner to the podcast. Dr. Rayner serves as president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. Prior to Lifeway, he served at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary for 12 years as the founding dean of the Billy Graham School of Missions and Evangelism. Dr. Rayner, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. And by the way, for the listening audience, as we're recording this, we're about 45 minutes away from Lifeway Chapel, where you will be preaching. And so that is going to be so incredibly cool to have you in our chapel.
Well, let me tell you, I'm looking forward to it. And even as we talk here this morning, I want to note we are in your studio, not mine. Most of these podcasts take place on the campus of Midwestern Seminary, but here in Nashville in your office, temporary office, given the new construction you guys
have. Yeah, cheap everything. Just look around. It's all superficial. It's all cheap.
I wasn't going to let the cat out of the bag, but I'm impressed nonetheless, and want to say on the forefront of this podcast my appreciation for you, the many different levels of partnership we have, entity to entity, friend to friend, and just the work of Lifeway. I know publishing to some degree. I know selling books to some degree, and it is a tough sledding out there for many companies.
It is. And let me just say, to extend the partnership to what you do at Rayner on Leadership, the podcast, the partnership that we have with Midwestern, everywhere we go now, people are saying, tell me about Midwestern. Some of it's us that's getting the word out, but most of it has to do with what is happening at Midwestern. Unbelievable story.
You're kind. We're in a very sweet season of ministry. The Lord has been good to bless with financial gifts and with a tremendous enrollment growth. And anyway, we could reflect on that in a podcast in and of itself, but we won't do that today.
Yeah, we could.
Well, listen, we're here at Lifeway. We're talking. We'll be preaching in chapel here shortly, but we want to talk today on this podcast about 7 habits of long-tenured pastors. Now, on my podcast weekly, we're speaking usually and most often to pastors and to those involved in active ministry, local church ministry. And one of my passions talking to this group is seeing pastorates that extend over long tenures. I know this is in your heart as well. You've written this in different books about church health and so forth. And I guess before we get into the mechanics or the 7 habits or 7, practices of long-tenured pastors, let's just set the stage, Dr. Rayner. Why is this an issue? Why is this a passion for yours? Why do you see the need for the church and for people like us to be intentional about encouraging long-tenured pastorates?
Let's approach it both from a theological and then a practical perspective. First, beginning with the theological perspective, many pastors, in order to effectively preach the word in season, out of season, week in, week out, need to do so on an ongoing basis. The effective preaching of the word usually takes place when that same person is going through, say, a book of the Bible or consistently preaching through the Bible. And so you cannot do that in a short-term pastorate. The whole theological foundation of what we do through preaching is much more effective in the long-term pastorate. Secondly, from a practical point of view, we have all kinds of research, Dr. Allen, that just simply demonstrates a correlative factor, not necessarily a causative factor, but a correlative factor is long-term pastorates overall, by almost any metric, tend to be healthier churches. They're healthier churches evangelistically. They're certainly healthier churches in their doctrine. They're healthier churches in their discipleship and assimilation. So we look at the research and we say, okay, it's certainly effective from a theological point of view, but the research also says it's having a great impact because of the relational equity and because of the consistency of ministry over years.
And the other part I would say to this is, to me, it's just exhilarating, in a sense, to come to Lifeway's Chapel and preach here, there, different places, as I get to do and you get to do. But there's nothing sweeter than preaching to the same people week after week.
Yeah.
You get to know them, their stories, their needs, their hurts, their hopes, and to see the Word of God shape them week in and week out, year after year, and see that take place. That in many ways, is when real life transformation takes place.
It does. And what I really am, where I'm really encouraged, Dr. Allen, at the millennial generation, that generation born between 1980 and 2000, that is a generation that is not necessarily going for the green grass syndrome of the other churches. Their generation, as a rule, a pastor will come in and that he will say, I am going to plant myself here, not just a church plant, but a pastor plant, and I'm going to plant myself here for a season. The grass is not greener somewhere else. The best thing that I can do, God willing, God's will, the best thing I can do is to stay here for the long haul, and that's what I'm going to do. I got a son who is a pastor in Spring Hill. He told me he's been reticent to make the comment to his congregation for fear that it might seem to be a bit presumptuous. But he told me, he says, you know what, Dad, when his third child was born, he said, my desire is to be here when Collins graduates from college. So, you know, 20, 21 years
right
out. He is there for the long haul. I love seeing that. So I ended up joining the church for that, among other reasons.
That's right. That's right. You know, and it's interesting to me as one who leads a seminary, how the conversation on our campus and on seminary campuses have changed over the years. Here's what I mean by this. When I was a seminary student in the early 2000s in my MDiv degree at Southern Seminary, cafeteria conversation would often be about, you know, who do you think is going to succeed Adrian Rogers?
Or yeah,
who do you think is going to replace great Preacher X.
Yeah.
And it kind of fed a little bit of a climb the ladder mentality, a little bit of a man, who's going to get promoted here? Who's going to take this next pastor? When you were in seminary a few years before me, probably that conversation was around W.A. Criswell, people like that at First Baptist Dallas.
Okay. How about a lot of years before you?
Okay. Well,
there's a big age difference.
Who's going to replace George W. Truett then at First Baptist Dallas?
not that far back. But anyway, yeah. Several years. Or another question would be, what's that church running? In other words, the metric was the bigger the church, the better the church, and you need to climb the ladder to get to the bigger church.
Yeah, and I have just, as I'm on our campus now, the conversation has changed, and
yeah.
I don't hear much speculation about who is going to replace great Pastor X.
Yeah.
I hear more conversation about a city they hope to plant a church in, or mm-hmm. a congregation they hope to be with long term. And, you know, if that communicated a fundamental lack of ministry ambition or ministry zeal, that would be a concern. But I don't think it does. I think it communicates a desired rootedness.
Yeah.
A desire for, well, what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
The
long-term pastor, for sure. Absolutely.
Now, before we get into these seven habits, there is an underside or the other side to the coin, and that is what some short-term pastorates do. There often are downsides or damaging effects to short-term pastorates. What are some of those?
Well, some of the short-term pastorates are both cause and effect or effect and cause, so you got to look at it which way. Sometimes short-term pastorates are the result of disagreement. They're result of forced termination. They're results of church splits, and the list can go on and on. So there's a cause and effect there that the church already had an unhealthy situation, and so the short-term pastorate is an effect of that. But on the other side, if there's a short-term pastorate and those other factors do not exist, it is difficult for the church to connect relationally, first of all, with the pastor, to have the relationship of which you spoke of. Here's some of the research that we have done, too. Again, using different metrics, and I won't go into all the details, but using different metrics, we have found that the most fruitful years of a pastor's ministry, and again, fruitful, meaning theological conversion, growth, and the list could go on and on, occur after year five. Years 1 to 2 are basically the honeymoon. Most of the time it's shorter than that. Years 2 to 5 are some of the years of adjustment, even difficulty. The true fruit doesn't just end at 5, it begins at 5. So it takes that amount of time for congregations to begin to connect well with pastors. It's like a marriage. Mm-hmm. I'm about to celebrate my 40th anniversary, and some of the healthiest years have been in the latter years. The more that we not just settle down, not just Nellie, Joe, and Tom settling down with one another, but appreciating each other more and more. And that happens over time.
That's tremendous. Okay, so you have seven habits of long-tenured pastors, and you've written of this in recent months. And I just want to walk through these, and I want to read them and then kind of tee you up to elaborate on each one of them. Habit number one you suggest is long-tenured pastors, they don't skip a day in prayer and the ministry of the word.
Let's look at the early church and when the Grecian Jews were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. What did the first leaders of the church say? They didn't say, we've got to do all of this. They didn't say that we have to do every little detail of the church. What they said is, Acts 6:4, we must give attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. It was a focus of the early church for a reason, because this is very indicative that a true God-led pastor is going to be a man who is also a person led by God. You can't be led by God by just chasing everything except prayer in the ministry of the word. That is our connection to the one who created and called us.
You know, I want to give a follow-up comment to this as well. I've experienced this in my own life in ministry in earlier years when I was in the pastorate. And I was committed, as you, to preaching through books in the Bible. And when you have these verses staring you in the face every Sunday and you're trying to figure out, you know, what does Paul mean here? What does James mean here? The pull of that verse-by-verse exposition for me really helped to even anchor me more to the local church. In other words, I didn't have a lot of downtime to kind of daydream about, you know, some church I would hope to pastor one day in another city. I was just trying to figure out what Paul meant in Romans chapter 3. And that being tied to that text had a way of just planting me to that congregation.
Oh, absolutely. You were tied because you had to spend time in the Word. I mean, there was no way you could, most pastors know what I'm talking about when I talk about a sugar stick, that you can't do a sugar stick every week because you only have one sugar stick.
That's right.
Or three. And so you have to be spending your time in the Word so you don't drift into other directions.
Okay, habit number two. You say long-tenured pastors realize that gnats are gnats.
I got in trouble for this one, Dr. Allen. I really did. I did a blog post related to gnats, and I understand now, and if I had could have done it differently, I would have, but it's too late once it was out there. Some of our great church members out there thought that I was referring to them in the person as gnats. I was more referring to what happens in certain situations. So I just had to be careful on that again. Sometimes I can get myself in trouble when I do a quick blog post. When I'm talking about gnats, I'm talking about those little things that bug us, the little negative things that nip at us. It may be a little criticism here. It may be someone who is always trying to get their way. It may be a process that is taking too long, and we know it's taking too long, but we're having to work through it. Those are the gnats of ministry. Now, what happens in many churches, among many church leaders, is they look at those gnats as an end all in themselves, and they say, "I just can't take it at this church. I just got to move on." One of the things that age has been a benefit for me is I can look back and I can say that thing that I thought was a major crisis at the moment was just a gnat, or maybe a little bit more than a gnat. And the more mature pastors at any age, not just the older pastors, realize that they'll get through this, that they'll get on the other side of it. They may even outlast it. And so gnats are gnats, and they learn how to deal with it. One of the weaknesses I had in the four churches I pastored, I treated gnats like bears and tigers and lions, like they were trying to devour me. And so I would often fight back. I'm watching some of the younger pastors today who have much greater maturity than I did then, treating gnats like gnats.
You know, that's very well said. My mind raced back to a gentleman we mentioned earlier in the podcast. That's W.A. Criswell.
Yes.
And who pastored First Baptist Dallas, depending upon when you date his retirement, but all datings of his retirement would be north of 50 years, okay?
Yes.
So he pastored there north of 50 years, and he once famously quipped that he handled his critics by outliving them and just sticking around. And over the years, as people realize, man, you're not one of these fly-by-night preachers. You're not going to be in and out of here in 30 months. And people tend to, you know, congeal with the church and fall in line with your leadership, or they tend to relocate.
Yeah.
And, you know, the long-tenured pastor tends to weather these things and live through these
things
well.
It takes on the personality of the pastor, because those who stick around are following the leadership of the pastor. And the longer you're there, the more you will have those kind of people who are in your church.
You know, one other story here before we move on. I'm reminded of another friend who was having to swat a couple gnats in his church. And like you said, they were merely gnats, but they felt a touch like bears.
Yes.
And my friend told me that he didn't know what to do. You know, are these two people that are upset with me? Do they represent 200? And so he just raised it with his deacons in humble way. He said, look, folks, look, men, I'm in a situation. I'm getting a few people here, you know, criticize me pretty intensely. I'm trying to gauge, is this a broader sentiment of the church, or is this just a couple of people? And when he raised that in a humble way, the deacons overwhelmingly supported him, overwhelmingly, you know, said, no, we support you. These couple of families, they've been difficult on every pastor here for decades. And by him raising it, he was able to surface the fact that he actually was only dealing with a couple of gnats.
Wow. That is great. I love the way he did that. Showed a lot of maturity.
All right, number three, long-tenured pastors pray for wisdom.
We are promised in the book of James that if we will pray for wisdom, that he will grant it accordingly, and he will grant it abundantly. I'm often asked, Dr. Allen, in my current role, and I really mean often, it's not an overstatement, how can I pray for you? And I, when people ask me that, I take it as a great honor, a humbling honor. And I'm consistent, pray for wisdom, because I cannot lead effectively without God's wisdom. I cannot do anything well without God's wisdom. So why not pastors? The long-term pastors are those men who are praying not only daily, but in the context of their prayer, they're most often saying, God, give me the wisdom to get through this day. Why not lead supernaturally instead of naturally? That is the effect of this prayer.
Tremendous. Fourth, they dream big.
Yeah, this... I'm looking at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, and I'm looking at a vision from a leader, Jason Allen, that is a big vision. It is big, not just numerically, but it's even more so in terms of ministry impact. So what is happening at Midwestern Seminary? The seminary is responding. Enrollment is up. Impact is greater. The world is taking notice. Oftentimes we hear these dream big things and we think it's some type of man-centered methodology that you just get go to a motivational speech and you'll be okay. Look, we serve a God that is the creator of all. Why not go to him and say, God, I do want what you want, but in this church, use me to the fullest, whatever that may be. Let me have the dream that is your dream, God, and let me see what will happen in this church. Those are the type of pastors that will deal with gnats. They're the type of pastors that will have tough times, but ultimately they will see God's great vision in their church.
And do you have any particular recommendation over as far as how one should triage their dream for the church? I mean, should they be thinking, you know, 3-year goals, 5-year goals, lifetime goals? I mean, how do you encourage pastors?
I really encourage pastors to look at a 3-year window. Certainly you can look past 5 and 7 years and say, where will I be? Change other than those things that are unchangeable is so incredibly rapid that if you start getting beyond that, you might get frustrated. And so, okay, let's look and let's ask the question, where will we be in 3 years? You may have in the back of your mind a longer-term strategy, a longer-term goal, and you may need to if there's capital issues involved there. But ultimately, I ask the question, what will God do through my leadership over the next 3 years?
You know, in the world of theological education, a major study came out last year on this topic. And because you hear schools talk about 10-year plans, one school had a 100-year plan, I mean, which is laughable.
Wow.
Well, the ATS, which, as you know, is the major accrediting agency for seminaries, divinity schools in North America, one article within their study advocated that seminaries operate on a 3-year planning, but be prepared to adjust that plan after 18 months.
Yes.
Be willing to adjust after 18 months. The world is changing so rapidly.
I am in an organization, leading an organization that's been around since 1891. And I would suppose that the rate of change had been fairly incremental up until the 90s. And every year since then, it has not only increased, but I think I could say, well, even though I don't have the metrics, that the increase has been exponential. And so we're always turning on a dime and asking the question, what do we do next? We understand that church leaders are living in the world of much of the unchangeable, the Word of God, the truth of Scripture, His constancy, God's constancy. We understand all of those things, but the world that they're living in and they're ministering is changing so rapidly that maybe that 3-year plan can be adjusted, but it's hard to get any further out than that.
Tremendous. All right, point number 5, they intentionally seek to see the green grass in their own churches.
When I speak of the green grass, I'm speaking of that as Apostle Paul said, to focus on those things which are good, lovely, praiseworthy, etc. Oftentimes we get discouraged because we see things too closely. We're seeing the weeds day by day, and it can become extremely frustrating. The green grass means we're seeing what is happening that is good. Sometimes you need an outside perspective to do that. Sometimes I'll just call someone up and say, tell me what you're seeing here. That tells us that God is still working through us. That gives us encouragement. Oftentimes we think that the green grass is somewhere else, but that green grass was someone else's brown grass because they left. And so where you are is where you should see the green grass.
Or as another friend once quipped, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence because there's more manure over there.
There you go. There's another good metaphor that works exceptionally well.
All right, number six, long tenured pastors, that they keep an outward focus.
Yeah, I was just talking to Jonathan Howe, the host of my podcast, and he was sharing with me a project that a pastor is doing. And the project essentially was this, looking at the difference between pastors of churches that are reaching people and pastors that are not, growing versus non-growing churches. And one of the things that came back very simply, just very simply, is this. Pastors in that latter group that are reaching people are doing the work of evangelism themselves. That does not mean that they're doing it in the totality by themselves. It does not mean they're not equipping the saints to do the work of ministry, but it does mean that they are modeling evangelism, and the church takes on that modeling, and they begin to become an evangelistic church too. First of all, it's a scriptural admonition. It is a mandate in Scripture to do the work of the evangelist, 2 Timothy 4:5. But also it has a very real result in that evangelistic churches are led by evangelistic pastors. And
yes,
that's a long-term benefit.
And that's back to that trickle-down effect.
Yes.
You show me a pastor that's prayerful, I'll show you a church over time that's prayerful.
Exactly.
Show me a pastor that's evangelistic, I'll show you a church over time that's evangelistic. Now, there's a seventh point, and boy, this might be the most important of all. You say long-tenured pastors, they take care of their families.
I often hear, Dr. Allen, pastors, and I probably have said it at different points, I got to learn how to balance family and ministry. I think that is a false dichotomy. I think when Paul was talking about taking care, how can you lead the church if you cannot manage your own family, he was doing that in the context of how ministry takes place. Let's begin to, not necessarily reverse it, but let's look at it from a different perspective. Let's look at it from this perspective. You don't balance ministry and family. You say this, I do ministry and my first priority is my family. When you do that, you then say, okay, before I'm doing effective ministry anywhere else, I have to make sure I am taking care of my own family. That's what the Apostle Paul seemed to be saying, that if you're not ministering here, not choosing between two things, but where you begin your ministry and where you focus your initial ministry, the rest of everything will follow. I wish I had listened to myself more in my own pastoral ministry. I wish other pastors would as well. This is where ministry often fails and falls, because you're not taking care of your family. And this is one of the primary reasons that many pastors don't make it to the midterm, much less the long term.
Mm-hmm. Very well said, and what an important point to end on. Seven habits of long-tenured pastors. They don't skip a day in prayer or the ministry of the word. They realize gnats are gnats. They pray for wisdom. They dream big. They intentionally seek to see the green grass in their own churches. They keep an outward focus, and they take care of their families. Dr. Rainer, thank you so much for your article and for the conversation today. And may the Lord be pleased to raise up many, many, many more long-tenured pastors in our generation.
It's been my joy. Now, as we end this podcast, let's go hear some good preaching in Lifeway Chapel as well.
I'll do my best.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.